from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Life coaching is having a big moment in the sun right now. People hiring life coaches for advice, guidance, clarity, inspiration on work, career, anything. You pay, they coach. There used to be a stigma, not so much anymore. It's a $2 billion business globally and hot in the USA. This hour on Point, the rise of the life coach. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are you being coached on how to handle life by a paid coach? Do you know someone who is? How's it going? What's the appeal? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me first today from New York is Genevieve Smith, senior editor for New York Magazine and a writer for Harper's Magazine. She's gone inside the life coaching world, attended coaching classes, written it up for Harper's. Her headline is 50,000 Life Coaches Can't Be Wrong. Genevieve Smith, welcome to On Point. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Am I right that there's a boom in this? I'm suddenly hearing a lot about life coaches. I used to hear a little. Lately, it's all over the place. What's going on?
Well, I think a couple things are happening. I think one thing is that we had a big recession, and I think during the recession was a time that a lot of people started asking those questions about their own careers and their own lives. Maybe they were laid off. Maybe their retirement wasn't looking as cushy as it did before. And they started thinking of, well, what do I want out of my life? And started maybe attending life coaching sessions or exploring it. And then a really appealing option once they started seeing a life coach was maybe becoming a life coach themselves. And I think that sort of undergirds a lot of this rise that we're seeing in just thousands of new life coaches.
$2 billion industry globally. I'm not sure what to think of the scale of that. 700 million, 800 million plus in the U.S. I mean, it's now an industry. I'm reading here from IBIS World U.S. This is they describe industry by industry. And it says here, life coaches assist individuals with personal relationship and business matters. Demand for their services grows when public confidence declines and people's ability to handle the surplus and scope of issues on their own falters. And as they say it went up when we had a bad economy in this country. Seems like it went up further than I ever recall it in the past. I don't recall somehow in dips in the 50s or the 70s. I just don't remember. There was EST, but this is something new these days.
Right. Well, I think it also, you know, its history is actually with EST and with neuro-linguistic programming and with sort of the corporate management programs of the 80s. All of those have kind of fused together into the life coach, which is a very flexible term. You know, there's no license to become a life coach. Anyone can take on the title and start taking clients and start charging. So it allowed for this huge flexibility and this huge boon in the industry. So you're seeing people draw from just decades of self-help in order to form their own programs that they use to help people.
Who tends to hire a life coach and for what, Genevieve?
Well, I personally looked more at who becomes a life coach than who tends to hire a life coach. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, the people who hire them, one, you're seeing it happen in the corporate sector where companies that might have had a lot of kind of middle management that was supportive of younger employees or a larger HR department are hiring coaches as outside consultants to come in and work with people in their company. You're also seeing, you know, young people who, you know, they've got college debt, their careers aren't really getting traction, who are looking for extra help. You see retirees who are, you know, a big booming industry within life coaching is this sort of late life transition for people who are need a soft landing, as they call it, from the working world into retirement, and how do they craft that?
So they become paid mentors or life coaches. You're suggesting there.
Right. And in terms of the people who become life coaches, the school that I went to, the Coaches Training International, CTI, Institute, they said that the majority of their students are women in their 40s and 50s, white women, college educated, And but within that, you still get a huge variety of the types of people who are becoming life coaches. I met a rabbi who felt that she could reach a more diverse population if she was a life coach as well. I met therapists who felt that if they added life coaching to their credentials, then they could market themselves more easily to new clients. There were mothers who were going back into the working world. There were people who were looking for a new retirement career. There were young people who, you know, have been learning about self-help for their entire lives and now feel that they're equipped to help others. There were all kinds of people who felt that life coaching was a good career option for them.
It's funny, if rabbis and therapists are becoming life coaches, there's a certain cachet here. It wasn't that long ago where there was still quite a lot of ribbing about this. Here's a little tape from 2006. This was The Daily Show with Jon Stewart poking a little fun at life coaching. With life coach Deborah Roth, comedian Dimitri Martin tried to figure out exactly here what a life coach is.
So a life coach is just like having a really good friend.
I charge on a monthly package basis, and the package ranges from $275 a month up to $525.
Oh, okay. So a life coach is like having a really good friend who charges.
Kind of jaundiced view of life coaching. What about those charges, Genevieve? We'll talk about the education that you saw people getting. What does it cost to hire a life coach?
Well, to hire a life coach,
yeah,
or to become a life coach?
Hire.
To hire a life coach, it can cost you, you know, typically the sessions started around $100. I've heard tale that they can be up to a couple thousand. I think that's probably more if you're a CEO or a big business corporate client, and your company is actually paying for you.
Are we talking for an hour, a day? What's a session?
Usually the sessions last about 45 minutes. They're almost all over the phone. There are some coaches do in-person sessions, but most of the coaches that I spoke with do their sessions over the phone. Oftentimes it'll be once a week or three times a month. And, you know, it's any place. The beginning coaches might charge $50, $75. Coaches easily charge $400 or $500. So it's on par for the most part for what people end up paying for private therapy,
so
which I think is...
We'll hear from a therapist later in this hour who's not so sure about the trend, and from a life coach who's had a lot of success. Take us into the training that you saw. You actually signed up for this course. People come to this from all kinds of backgrounds, but in your case, these were people coming into what kind of setting to learn what, Genevieve?
So I took a training course with the Coaches Training Institute, which is one of the oldest life coaching schools based out of California. And the life coach training that they provide is 3-day modules, 5 3-day modules. So the first one was about fundamentals, where you kind of got an overview. The next one was about fulfillment and figuring out your values and how you would help. And the way that they trained was very experiential, so that as you were learning these skills that you would use as a coach, you were also being coached yourself and also being asked to explore those topics in yourself. So there was fundamentals. There was fulfillment, which was about values. There was a course called balance, which was about learning perspectives on an issue. So if you had a problem, you could look at it from various points of view. And they used tons of metaphor. Metaphor is huge in coaching in order to get people to look at their problems in different ways. So for the perspective, you know, you might have a problem that your mother-in-law is driving you crazy and you want to have a better relationship with her. And so they would say, well, what would the problem look like if you looked at it from the perspective of springtime? And what would it look like if you looked at it from the perspective of a hot air balloon? And the coach's job was to come up with these reference points that could help the client think about their problem in a new way and then guide them towards a new perspective on it.
So what's your impression then of what makes a good life coach from looking around and listening at these training sessions?
Well, I think part of being a good life coach is having an intuitive sense of people, being able to read where they are, being able to understand the information that they're giving you both verbally and through either body language or the tone of their voice if it's over the phone, and then being able to kind of reflect back to them what they're saying and help them kind of have a deeper understanding of that. It certainly requires a lot of empathy. It requires very good listening. And a lot of those skills, as I'm saying these, they're also the same skills that make somebody a good friend or a good partner. it's pretty indistinguishable, I would say, in terms of what makes you good at it. And I do think that bag of tricks helps, you know, to be able to draw on different ways of getting people to look at their problems is certainly helpful if you're sitting there with someone, you know. Otherwise, you can easily just spin your wheels if someone's telling you a problem and they just seem to be going over the same thing over and over and over again. You need to have different things you can draw on. So knowing those also seems to make someone a better life coach.
Genevieve, did going through the process yourself of life coach training, and again, people come to this by many paths, I suppose, did it make you more interested in having a life coach? Did it make you think, yeah, this might be helpful? Or did you think, well, why not just have a friend?
Look, I would be lying if I said that I didn't want to get something personal out of it. You know, you go into these experiences and, you know, part of the agreement that I made with them was that I wasn't allowed to just observe the course. I had to participate in the course. So I did all the exercises. I was completely honest when I was supposed to be a client in an exercise, and I tried my hardest when I was a coach in an exercise. And I did get something out of it. I thought most of the people that I met were fantastic. They were really genuine, and they had really good, genuine reasons for wanting to become a life coach. But I also found that sense of epiphany, that sense that your life is transformed, is actually a really easy feeling to conjure up in yourself and in others, especially if someone's there primed to be transformed. So while I really enjoyed the experience, I also kind of felt like it was a little cheap in a way, and that there were better ways to get that experience. And being a friend for me is more important, I would say.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the boom in life coaching, life coaches, who it's for, what it's for, why it's happening. Genevieve Smith is with us. She's written for Harper's Magazine about her experience of going through life coaching, life coach training sessions. You can join us this hour as well. Are you part of the boom? Have you hired a life coach? Have you thought about it? Why do you think life coaching is having this moment in the sun in this country and really around the world right now? Maybe the story of life coach Merlin and Arthur. Here's a little bit from the BBC back in 2011. Merlin reminds Arthur of his destiny.
Proving that you're their leader and their king.
That sword is stuck fast in solid stone.
And you're going to pull it out.
Merlin, it's impossible.
Arthur, you're the true king of Camelot.
Merlin as life coach to Arthur. It's getting acceptability, maybe more than therapist in some quarters. Here's an episode from The Simpsons. Homer is disappointed with his life after flying on a private plane, realizing he'll never be wealthy enough to enjoy the high life. His wife, Marge, hires a life coach named Colby Krause, voiced by Stephen Colbert, to help Homer. You'll hear Marge first.
This is Colby Krause. I hired him to help you improve your life. He'll get you back on a private plane in no time.
No way. I don't need any shrink, therapist, counselor, motivational speaker, or guru.
I'm a life coach.
Oh, tell me more.
Call it a life coach, and Homer Simpson is on board. Genevieve Smith, please stand by in New York. With me right now in the studio is Allison Rim, management consultant and life coach, owner of Allison Rim & Associates, author of the book The Joy of Strategy, A Business Plan for Life. Allison Rim, life coach, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Do you call yourself a life coach?
I don't, actually. I do usually call myself a coach.
But you're not a basketball coach or a baseball coach. What do you coach?
I'm a little too short for basketball.
Okay.
I do a fair bit of executive coaching, and I do coach individual clients as well, mostly professionals who are looking for a career transition, to find more meaning or joy in their life, to find that elusive work-life balance. Anybody who's facing any kind of major transition in their lives are looking to extract a little bit of more meaning out of them.
Do you see that more people are turning to life coaches these days than 10, 25 years ago?
Well, to be perfectly honest, all those years ago, I was busy working as an executive myself, so I wasn't really watching the coaching industry at all. The way I got into this is that I was a senior vice president at Massachusetts General Hospital. It's one of the world's largest, oldest, most
big
prestigious organizations. And I was a senior VP working in this relentlessly demanding or organization where the expectation for excellence was just baseline, and the volume of work was big, big, big. So just as a senior executive and somebody who cared a lot about the people who were working there and wanting to see the whole organization succeed, because I was in charge of strategic planning for this $3 billion organization, I did a lot of coaching just as a informal part of my job, helping people who are coming in looking for help with any sort of thing. They wanted help managing a project or getting it off the ground or putting a strategy together for whatever their initiative was. And then I would see their life sort of encroaching on their ability to do their work. There were working mothers who are coming back from maternity leave, wondering how they were going to make it all work. Mm-hmm. There were folks dealing with all kinds of challenges, and it really occurred to me that people are doing their work, but that's happening in the larger context of everything else in their lives. And so I really got very interested in helping people find strategies to make it all work.
So, but do you see more of this going on? More people turning in this direction? It certainly looks like it. I mean, the industry write-ups say, you know, growth year upon year upon year here.
I hear that people are going to see coaches. And if my practice is any indication, then there's no shortage of interest in it. I get inquiries all the time.
Was there always a need there that was unmet, or are we somehow more needy, more needful of this kind of help in life than we used to be?
Well, I think the industry has gained some credibility as these organizations have sprung up and started training people. So the lexicon is much more there and people are aware of it. I think that the digital age has made work 24/7 really adds challenges. It adds opportunities, clearly, for more efficiency, but it makes it really hard to shut off and to balance all of those things. So with that opportunity comes the need to make it all work. And I think the idea of having a life coach there or any other coach who can show you some tips and tools and techniques for balancing it all and still being present and mindful and joyful as you're doing something with meaning makes a lot of sense.
Joyful, that's a great word. Allison Rim is with us. She'll coach you if the circumstances are right. Life coaching is big these days. Maurice in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Maurice. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Okay. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I guess my comment has to do with the digital age, I suppose, that people have a lot of friends these days, but they're text friends and they're internet friends and they're telephone, you know, friends. And you don't have the type of friends that you can sit down and really discuss some of the issues that you've been talking about, you know, career and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You can't do it in 144
characters on Twitter. So what do you think of it, Maurice? So you're thinking maybe we're a little bit more isolated from that kind of advice in spite of all the ways we can have, quote-unquote, friends? So does it make sense?
We don't have ones we can sit down and really discuss. Therefore, you need a life coach.
Would you do it, Maurice? Would you have done it?
I never felt the need to do it. I got a lot of advice from people as I progressed through my career, and I read and I thought about things, and I was able, I think, to deal with these issues myself. Not having to pay anybody anyway. I got friends from teachers and friends and family, and I was able to think about what they said and make decisions. Some were good and some were bad, but I didn't need to pay $500 an hour to get advice.
Maurice, I appreciate your call. Genevieve, what about it? That the suggestion from Maurice in Wisconsin that maybe there was a time when teachers and friends and family and, I don't know, your rabbi, your neighbor, your minister would fill this role, or colleagues and mentors at work.
Absolutely. I mean, I think he's totally right. And I heard that from people who were seeking to become life coaches themselves, that they felt that the traditional institutions for resolving these kinds of problems in your life, especially organized religion or family, those things had broken down. And they felt that life coaching was filling a really necessary void. And I also think he's right, too, that there's a loneliness underneath all of this, too. I think seeking out that connection with somebody where you really feel like someone is looking at you and giving you all of their attention I mean, underneath that is a lot of loneliness. And I think a lot of people are feeling that these days.
Allison, do you see old supports breaking down and in that a new market being created for this service? Or do you see new challenges mounting up that lead people to this?
Yeah, that's a great question, Tom. I see both. And the technology does really create some distance between people. And I think that's a really important point. Genevieve mentioned earlier that a lot of coaches work by phone. Whenever it's possible, at least for the initial meeting I have with a client, I really like to do it in person to establish that close relationship, be able to read their body language, look at their environment and how they relate to it. All of those things are really important, and they're lost when you're just sitting side by side doing Facebook or working in that way. But the other thing I think I would really love to add to this conversation is that coaching is a lot more than just about solving problems. Mm-hmm. It's about helping people find meaning. And in my practice, I really like to help people figure out what their strengths and talents are and to help them really shine those things up and find a way to do something meaningful with them. In fact, I really very, very strongly believe that we all have our talents that we're born with and that it's our responsibility to figure out what those things are and to do something with them to make a meaningful contribution.
Why doesn't that search for meaning get support from, I don't know, friends, lovers, brothers, sisters, good colleagues? I mean, are you saying that in the time before professional life coaches, people didn't have meaning in their lives?
I'm not saying that at all, Tom, but I think they didn't have maybe some of the kind of help that's available to them. Mm-hmm. And I remember as a younger person, just a couple of years
couple
ago,
yeah,
exactly, that I would hear people say, just follow your bliss. And I remember sitting there wanting to pull my hair out, saying, if one more person tells me to follow my bliss, I'm going to scream. I don't know what that is. How do you go and figure that out? Well, after spending two decades in strategic planning, where every project starts with a statement of purpose and what are you there to accomplish, I finally realized that the same tools that I was using to help plan for the success of these multi-billion dollar organizations could be used to help plan my own life and my career.
So you're bringing those kind of techniques right into personal life. Colleen's calling from Haverhill, Massachusetts. Colleen, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah. What's your story?
I personally have a life coach that is helping me through my PhD process as a non-traditional student. The process is overwhelming, and she has helped me fine-tune my skills toward the process. She's been an empathetic listener. She's an active listener, and she provides very cogent advice and strategies for helping me get through the process.
What about your doctoral advisor or the professors at wherever you're studying? Aren't they there for that?
That's a different type of relationship, Tom. As a primary investigator, they may have 10 to 15 other advisees, and when you're done with your classes, all of a sudden you're an independent scholar. And it's a pretty solitary process. So having someone that you can touch base with in terms of goals and outcomes prior to even going to your advisor helps that time with your advisor be that much more qualitative.
That is really interesting. Is it helping you get on that long down that long path toward the PhD?
It has. It's a long process. She's put me in a timetable where I have small milestones that I'm privy to and I want to accomplish, and it helps me reach my goal in a more succinct manner.
Colleen, good luck with that. It sounds like it's working out well for you. Let me get one more right here from New York. Tuckahoe, New York, Merrill. Hi, Merrill. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much.
Yeah.
Thanks for a great program. Very
Thank
stimulating.
You. Thank you.
I'm just curious. Whether your speakers are aware that this is a global phenomenon. This isn't just about a needy group of people in the United States that are somehow, lost and confused. But people are recognizing a great new technology out here. It's a young profession. But also, are we paying enough attention that there's a huge influx of people who are trained as mental health professionals swarming into coaching, not just because they want to find a new way to market, but because they recognize this new technology is very appropriate for the kind of pressures in today's world, and people are interested in results.
Meryl, you call it a technology. You lose me just a little bit there. I can see a system or a process or an approach, but why would a trained mental health professional move out of that formal category and into this more ambiguous area of life coach? What would be the attraction of that, Meryl?
The attraction, I think, is to help people at another level to really, and many therapists use this approach already, so I'm not trying to discount that.
Okay.
But this notion of what is my goal, not just what's my past, but where am I going? And that is ambiguous for people. And people like to have guides through the ambiguity of the future. Get clarity around where I want to go. And all the positive psychologists, and that's a whole school of thought, are saying, goals help people really be focused and feel more satisfied and feel happier.
A proactive guide, and maybe with that, mental health professionals coming into this field. Meryl, I appreciate your call. Allison Genevieve, stand by. I want to bring in Dr. David Lay from Albuquerque, New Mexico, practicing clinical psychologist, executive director of New Mexico Solutions. It's an outpatient mental health substance abuse program. He wrote about the blurring lines between therapy and life coaching for psychology today. Dr. David Lay, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Our caller describes mental health professionals swarming into life coaching. Have you seen that, and why would they do that?
Well, I've seen some of them swarm in, and I've seen a number of them swarm right back out.
Why? Why in, why out?
One of the really big issues here is the lack of regulation with coaching. It is a developing field. I think it is really a provocative kind of idea. Therapists and clients really want to give people assistance in moving forward in their patient client-centered directed goals. The challenge is that in an unregulated field, the patient doesn't have a lot of protections. There are no regulations that are governing, for instance, life coaching around issues of confidentiality or patient exploitation. So psychologists and therapists that have moved into coaching, many of them have moved back out as their licensing boards have come back and said, no, no, no. Anything you do is subject to the regulations that you're under as a therapist or a psychologist.
Because they're already professionals. But do you see something here that mental health professionals just aren't trained or equipped to do? Life coaches who are looking at more aspects of life and maybe, as our caller said, looking ahead rather than back to what happened to me when I was a child.
Potentially, and I think, you know, a lot of folks are moving in, are seeking out coaching that wouldn't normally seek out therapy, and I think that is a wonderful thing. I really think, as some of your callers have said, that it's an opportunity to get support in a way that is different from exist out there. I think that that is fabulous. I think the more people that we can help, the better. The caution that I put out there, though, is this is really a buyer beware situation where people who are seeking out coaching need to understand that in contrast to when they would go see a psychologist like myself, the coach doesn't have a regulation to protect confidentiality or, you know, for instance, even to treat their clients with respect. Many of them do, but there's nobody to answer to or nobody to go to if that coach hurts you.
If they don't. David Lay, please stand by in Albuquerque. Allison Rim with me here in the studio. Genevieve Smith in New York. We're talking about the boom in life coaching, life coaches, who it's for, what it's for, why it's happening. I don't know what Frank Sinatra would have thought of it. You tell us. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
For what is a man? What has he got? If not himself, then he has not to say the things he truly feels, and not the words of one who kneels. The record shows I took the blows and did it my way.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the boom in life coaching, life coaches, who it's for, what it's for, why it's happening. Coach Allison Rim is with us. She's author of The Joy of Strategy, A Business Plan for Life, joins me in the studio. Dr. David Lay is with us, practicing clinical psychologist, joins us from Albuquerque, New Mexico. He's written in Psychology Today about the blurring lines between therapy and life coaching. And Genevieve Smith is with us. She's written for Harper's Magazine. You can link to her piece at our website, onpointradio.org, about what went into the training that she participated in to become a life coach. So, Allison, David Lay, Genevieve, a couple of responses, lots of responses online here, but let me read you just a couple and get your reaction. So, first, here comes Lita. She says, we asked on Facebook, would you use a life coach? And she says, hell no. It's the silliest thing I ever heard of. Why does an adult need to spend a gob of money to talk to a perfect stranger with dubious educational or professional preparation to tell you how to run your life? It used to be called common sense. If you're short on common sense, write to Dear Abby or find a nice bartender. So there's Lita. No thanks. But here's another listener. Dana says, I found my life coach when I was at what I would call a spiritual rock bottom. I was going through a painful divorce, full of sorrow and self-loathing and feeling like I was just punching the clock till the end. I worked with her over the course of a year, and it absolutely changed my life. I'd spent a lifetime wallowing in the past and never realizing that I had the power to write my own present and future. Dana, with a big thumbs up for the experience. Allison, what about those two perspectives on the kind of work you do?
Well, amen, Dana. That's great news. I think both of you have a really good point. You know, Lita is absolutely right. There are all sorts of people out there calling themselves coaches, and it is a pretty significant investment to hire one. So it's really up to the individual to know exactly what it is that they're trying to get out of this coaching experience and what kind of return they're looking for that investment. So I can think of several of my own clients who came to me because they had specific objectives that they wanted to achieve.
Like what? Give us some examples that might be appropriate.
So I had one client who had been in a mind-numbingly boring job for years and had complained and complained and complained about it and finally gotten to the point where he said, you know, I've got maybe 10 years left on my career. Is this all it is? I really want to do something much more exciting. Mm-hmm. So he came to me for coaching to help him make that transition. He was in such a well-worn groove at his job that it really had turned into much more of a rut. So it took some serious activation energy to get himself together and put himself back on the job market after being out of it for so long. Well, when he came to me, he was really nervous about making this transition mm-hmm. because he had some gray hair. He was working in a high-tech field mm-hmm. where all these young 20-somethings are coming out yep. of this yep. school much more facile on social media and everything else. And he was full of what I call the yeah, but habit. Yeah, I really want to make a change, but nobody will ever
How
hire me because I'm
that?
This mm-hmm. and blah, blah, blah. So all of his buts, which mm-hmm. I told him he better get off of mm-hmm. if he wanted to
right,
get anywhere,
right.
were really excuses. So once we could name them, then we could look at creating strategies to get past them and help him get what he wanted. So I really helped him challenge all of his assumptions that the gray hair was a liability. And I said, you know, if people are looking for leaders, then they're going to recognize that that gray hair is an asset.
Is it all attitudinal what you deal with? Or when you give advice, are you saying, get on the phone and call X person right now and say why?
It's absolutely both. But in order to get him to the place where he had the courage to pick up the phone and make that call, we needed to really shore up his courage with very practical tools and issues and to coach him through this process. So this guy was a really interesting case
yep.
because when he came to me for maybe our second coaching conversation, mm-hmm. he brought three or four jobs that he wanted to apply for that sounded exactly to me like the one he was already in. And I said, Wait a minute.
What's your goal here?
How is that any better? Mm-hmm. And I said, those sound every bit as boring as the one you're in. What gives? And he says, well, yeah, but I think I can actually get these jobs. And I said, but do you really want them? You know, what are they really exciting to you? And then his eyes lit up and he said, you know, I read in the newspaper about this huge grant that's out there and a new program that's being started up, but it's the two greatest organizations in the world coming together to do this sort of thing, and I'll never blah, blah, blah.
How could I do that?
So I said, rather than saying never, one thing is sure. If you don't go for it, you won't get it.
Yeah.
You know, if you do go for it, you might not get it, but you might. And then we came up with strategies for every curveball that that CEO could throw him in an interview and came up with answers. So when he found the courage to apply and he got the interview, he was armed with answers. And when those curveballs came, he just hit them right out of the park.
David Lay, this sounds like the kind of advice that a therapist is very unlikely to give. I mean, it's almost in a different arena. This is like, I don't know, a politician would have their consultants advising them on how to win a campaign, or a CEO might have a sort of kitchen cabinet who was helping them, you know, buff their strategy or their presentation. This is a different realm from therapy at this point, isn't it, David?
I'll say yes and no. You know, a good therapist actually should be able to identify what their patient really needs, what kind of support and coaching they're going to benefit from in the therapy session. And so I have patients that tell me, I really need you to be more directive with me. I really want you to give me assignments and follow up with me. And then I have others that want to do more insight-oriented kind of work. That's great. And the thing I really want to say, though, is that, you know, coaching is a wake-up call to the mental health industry that, you know what, you're laying back on the couch and telling me about your mom when you were 5 years old, it's not going to help right now, and it's not going to help me deal with the issue that is on hand, which is I got to get a job.
Anne in Worcester, Massachusetts, you're on the air, Anne.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you for having me on. Great show. I'm a leadership psychologist and entered this field before there was a thing called coaching. And what the need was at that time, and I think still is people are promoted into leadership roles in this culture because they're really competent technically in their area of expertise,
okay,
which doesn't mean they have the psychological understanding of people and what it takes to lead people. And I think that was one of the great needs for coaches in a business environment. The other reason I think coaching works is somebody had asked, why don't you just turn to your best friend or your husband or a mentor? Part of the reason is everybody has an agenda, and you're in their life, but they have an overarching agenda. And so it's very difficult for people to listen to you openly and focus on you and what your agenda is without being influenced by what they need you to do to help them advance their agenda in their life. And that's where a coach brings something very different to the table.
So the coach is a personal champion who doesn't have your mother-in-law's agenda or your wife's or your husband's or your friend. I mean, I get that, a kind of personal champion. Allison, you're nodding your head yes there. I guess that, I mean, you know, if we're all on our own and out there to make it, maybe we need a personal champion, though I don't know if having some investment in your life apart from your career is a bad thing either.
Well, it's such a great point. So my practice is full of executives that I coach, trying to help them do just what this caller is suggesting. They rose up through the ranks because they were excellent doctors or lawyers or engineers. But it, as she says, it does not prepare them for managing complex projects and navigating the politics of a large organization or any of that. And a previous caller, also the academic one, talked about her mentor. But mentorship is really a lost art, and it's very difficult. And those mentors often have their own agendas because they were also raised as these professionals, and that's what they know, and that's what they advise people to do. So I see it all the time. I saw it all the time when I was working at Mass General in a hospital environment. Younger people would get an older mentor who would try to teach them to do exactly what they had done rather than listening really carefully to what the younger person was looking to do to develop their own career and help them figure out how to think outside of the box that they know so well and develop a strategy to achieve their own goals.
Genevieve, you're listening here. Is this, do you think, growing in part because everybody's kind of, you know, out for themselves these days? There's no time to mentor. You know, everybody's on their own stick, and you've got to hire your professional coach as an advisor, or you can't compete.
I do feel that most people do feel that the stakes are higher now, right? We all have this little bit of anxiety that, you know, we're either going to be in the winner pool or the loser pool, and we need every edge we can get to make sure that, that life works out for us. And I think there's sort of two trends that are kind of coming together to make those stakes feel really high. One is we've had the loss of the career for life. It used to be that, you know, you set out on your path, you know, after college or out of high school, and there you went. And that really doesn't exist for most people anymore. Most people graduating from college now feel that they'll be in the job that they're in for a couple years, and then they'll have to find something new. And they're really set at sea. They're freelance, right? We're all freelancers now. And then on the other side, there's so much pressure to have a meaningful career, right? For everything, for your career to be this lifelong fulfillment. It isn't just enough to go to work and have a paycheck and use that money to support the rest of your life. The job itself has to have that meaning. And I think those tensions really make people feel that they're in some sort of crisis, that they need that extra help.
It certainly sounds good if it can have a lot of dimensionality and fulfillment. Who wouldn't like that? Of course, it's not easy to get there. Maybe a coach helps. Byron in New York, Plattsburgh, New York. Byron, thanks for calling. You're on.
Hey, Tom. How's it going?
Okay. What's your story?
Well, I'm a professional pilot for a cargo company, and I thought I'd call and give a little insight into my life. I'm 23 years old, graduated college when I was 21. I went into the flying business. I just wanted to chime in on the mentor thing. The reason why I got started flying was through a mentor. And I know it's a really, you know, small slice of the pie, but I really do think reaching out to someone when you're young and you're trying to succeed will eventually help you in your long-term career goals.
In your field, flying cargo, is it common to have a mentor who takes a real interest? Do you feel like you need more than that, Byron?
It used to be more common than it is. We have organizations that are trying to promote flying and getting into flying. But I feel my generation, for that matter, is much more withheld from reaching out to someone. They're much less, I guess, socially interactive. And I've been listening just recently to, I believe, Anne about the life coach. I think that could definitely try to fill the void. But I think that when I meet a lot of new people, reaching out to them just by talking to them, they're usually overwhelmingly supportive, and they want to help, at least in my career path. So I meet a more senior pilot, for instance. He's like, oh, here, take my card. You know, do you have any questions? And you obviously have to reach out to them and try to interact with them in a humble tone, I guess.
Well, that's interesting. So a mentoring tradition in your field there, but I can hear at the same time, in your case, Byron, an openness to the idea of a coach. If you're in a generation that's maybe not quite as engaged in that. Let me get one. Thank you, Byron, and good luck to you flying. Fly safe. Sherry in Boston. Sherry, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. Mm-hmm. I want to put in a pitch for trained professionals. I think it's a little presumptive for someone who is essentially not educated or trained to counsel people to give advice. There are no controls. It feels like the Wild West to me.
Genevieve has gone off to a training course, which three-day sessions, and off they go. What about that training, Sherry?
Eight years beyond my baccalaureate, you know, including having to go into analysis myself in order to function as a therapist. I mean, I think the implication from your people who replied to you are that that trained people are don't have common sense, and they're not supportive, they're not cheerleaders, and I don't know where those ideas are coming from.
Sherry, I appreciate your call, Dr. David Lay in Albuquerque. Speak to that. Sherry's just worried about a lack of training here. What do you see?
Tom, I think that Sherry raises a good point, and that is people go to long years of training to become a therapist or a psychologist or a doctor for reasons, because the problems that people walk in the door with are not simple, and some of them might be, but many of them are connected to lots of other big issues, things like suicide, things like depression, things like sexuality or relationship conflicts. These are not simple problems that we can just give easy advice for, and well-trained clinicians know when they can give advice and when they can't. The real concern with coaching is that, not that these folks are out there or that they're offering support. I'm glad they are.
Mm-hmm.
I think they need better support to know when they are in over their head, to know when coaching is turning into therapy. You know, I heard a caller mention earlier that coaching was helping people to find meaning in their lives. I think that is absolutely wonderful. But what's the difference between that and therapy? Because when we start getting into those kinds of issues, then we start tapping into things that are really challenging, where we really need folks to have these coaches, to have supervisors, to have people that they're consulting with to know, hey, this is getting into dangerous land. Hey, this patient probably needs to be on medication or should see a psychiatrist.
Of course, meanwhile, the field is sort of pushing ahead on its own. Allison, do you see a line between coaching and therapy? Is it clear to you? And what about the concerns we're hearing?
Absolutely. I think this is a very, very important point to make. But in my mind, I don't see this as an either or. I see this as a yes and. Mm-hmm. So I'm very careful when somebody comes to me for coaching to do an assessment about whether I think that I have the solution to whatever their need is. And I will look at where somebody is, where they're trying to go, and try to suss out what's been holding them back. If I sense that there's some sort of mental health issue, relationship issue, whatever, then I will refer them to a psychologist. And likewise, I've had psychologists actually prescribe my book to their patients, which I was delighted to hear, but also to have them refer somebody when what their patients need is an actual strategy to move forward.
It can roll both ways. Genevieve Smith, what do you think? If the economy comes roaring back, are we out of this, or is this a new fixture in American culture?
I would say there's been some form of this for the last couple decades, and self-help is just getting bigger and bigger. I don't see this going away anytime soon.
Genevieve Smith with Harper's and New York Magazine, thanks so much for being with us. Dr. David Lay in Albuquerque, thank you for joining us today. And Allison Rim, author of The Joy of Strategy. Allison, thank you very much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Life Coaching. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.